Chapter 34. Enthusiasts, Hebrew youths, common fellows of all sorts, that used to come and go around Peter Ivanovich, fanatics, pedants, proletarians all. It was pleasant to talk to this young man of notably good appearance, for Madame de S. was not always in a mystical state of mind. Razumov's taciturnity only excited her to a quicker, more voluble utterance. It still dealt with the Balkans. She knew all the statesmen of that region, Turks, Bulgarians, Montenegrins, Romanians, Greeks, Armenians, and nondescripts, young and old, the living and the dead. With some money an intrigue could be started which would set the peninsula in a blaze, and outrage the sentiment of the Russian people. A cry of abandoned brothers could be raised, and then, with the nation seething with indignation, a couple of regiments or so would be enough to begin a military revolution in St. Petersburg, and make an end of these thieves. Apparently I've got only to sit still and listen, the silent Razumov thought to himself. As to that hairy and obscene brute, in such terms did Mr. Razumov refer mentally to the popular expounder of a feministic conception of social state, as to him, for all his cunning he too shall speak out someday. Razumov ceased to think for a moment. Then a somber-toned reflection formulated itself in his mind, ironical and bitter. Have the gift of inspiring confidence. He heard himself laughing aloud. It was like a goad to the painted, shiny-eyed harridan on the sofa. You may well laugh, she cried hoarsely. What else can one do? Perfect swindlers, and what base swindlers at that. Cheap Germans, Holstein Goddards. Though, indeed, it's hardly safe to say who and what they are. A family that counts a creature like Catherine the Great in its ancestry, you understand. You are only upsetting yourself, said Peter Ivanovich, patiently but in a firm tone. This admonition had its usual effect on the Egeria. She dropped her thick, discolored eyelids and changed her position on the sofa. All her angular and lifeless movements seemed completely automatic now that her eyes were closed. Presently she opened them very full. Peter Ivanovich drank tea steadily, without haste. Well, I declare. She addressed Razumov directly. He people who have seen you on your way here are right. You are very reserved. You haven't said 20 words altogether since you came in. You let nothing of your thoughts be seen in your face either. I have been listening, madam, said Razumov, using French for the first time, hesitatingly, not being certain of his accent. But it seemed to produce an excellent impression. Madame de S. looked meaningly into Peter Ivanovich's spectacles, as if to convey her conviction of this young man's merit. She even nodded the least bit in his direction, and Razumov heard her murmur under her breath the words, later on in the diplomatic service, which could not but refer to the favorable impression he had made. The fantastic absurdity of it revolted him, because it seemed to outrage his ruined hopes with the vision of a mock career. Peter Ivanovich, impassive as though he were deaf, drank some more tea. Razumov felt that he must say something. Yes, he began deliberately, as if uttering a meditated opinion. Clearly, even in planning a purely military revolution, the temper of the people should be taken into account. You have understood me perfectly. The discontent should be spiritualized. That is what the ordinary heads of revolutionary committees will not understand. They aren't capable of it. For instance, Mordatev was in Geneva last month. Peter Ivanovich brought him here. You know Mordatev? Well, yes, you have heard of him. They call him an eagle, a hero. He has never done half as much as you have. Never attempted, not half. Madame de S. agitated herself angularly on the sofa. We, of course, talked to him. And do you know what he said to me? What have we to do with Balkan intrigues? We must simply extirpate the scoundrels. Extirpate is all very well, but what then? The imbecile. I screamed at him, but you must spiritualize, don't you understand? Spiritualize the discontent. dot dot. She felt nervously in her pocket for a handkerchief. She pressed it to her lips. Spiritualize? Said Razumov interrogatively, watching her heaving breast. The long ends of an old black lace scarf she wore over her head slipped off her shoulders, and hung down on each side of her ghastly rosy cheeks. An odious creature, she burst out again. Imagine a man who takes 5 lumps of sugar in his tea. Dot dot dot, yes, I said spiritualize. How else can you make discontent effective and universal? Listen to this, young man. Peter Ivanovich made himself heard solemnly. Effective and universal. Razumov looked at him suspiciously. Some say hunger will do that, he remarked. Yes. I know. Our people are starving in heaps. But you can't make famine universal. And it is not despair that we want to create. There is no moral support to be got out of that. It is indignation. Dot dot, Madame de S. let her thin, extended arm sink on her knees. I am not a mordative, began Razumov. Bean sir, murmured Madame de S., though I too am ready to say extirpate, extirpate. But in my ignorance of political work, permit me to ask. A Balkan well intrigue, wouldn't that take a very long time? Peter Ivanovich got up and moved off quietly, to stand with his face to the window. Razumov heard a door close. He turned his head and perceived that the lady companion had scuttled out of the room. In matters of politics I am a supernaturalist. Madame de S. broke the silence harshly. Peter Ivanovich moved away from the window and struck Razumov lightly on the shoulder. This was a signal for leaving, but at the same time he addressed Madame de S. in a peculiar reminding tone, Eleanor. Whatever it meant, she did not seem to hear him. She leaned back in the corner of the sofa like a wooden figure. The immovable peevishness of the face, framed in the limp, rusty lace, had a character of cruelty. As to extirpating, she croaked at the attentive Razumov, there is only one class in Russia which must be extirpated. Only one. And that class consists of only one family. You understand me? That one family must be extirpated. Her rigidity was frightful, like the rigor of a corpse galvanized into harsh speech and glittering stare by the force of murderous hate. The sight fascinated Razumov, yet he felt more self-possessed than at any other time, since he had entered this weirdly bare room. He was interested. But the great feminist by his side again uttered his appeal, Eleanor. She disregarded it. Her carmine lips vaticinated with an extraordinary rapidity. The liberating spirit would use arms before which rivers would part like Jordan, and ramparts fall down like the walls of Jericho. The deliverance from bondage would be effected by plagues and by signs, by wonders and by war. The women. Dot dot, Eleanor. She ceased, as he had heard him at last. She pressed her hand to her forehead. What is it? Ah yes. That girl the sister of... Dot dot, it was Miss Alden that she meant. That young girl and her mother had been leading a very retired life. They were provincial ladies, were they not? The mother had been very beautiful, traces were left yet. Peter Ivanovich, when he called there for the first time, was greatly struck. Dot dot dot, but the cold way they received him was really surprising. He is one of our national glories, Madame de S. cried out, with sudden vehemence. LL the world listens to him. I don't know these ladies, said Razumov loudly rising from his chair. What are you saying, Kirillo Sidorovich? I understand that she was talking to you here, in the garden, the other day. Yes, in the garden, said Razumov gloomily. Then, with an effort, she made herself known to me. And then ran away from us all, Madame de S. continued, with ghastly vivacity. Stir coming to the very door. What a peculiar proceeding. Well, I have been a shy little provincial girl at one time. Yes, Razumov, she fell into this familiarity intentionally, with an appalling grimace of graciousness. Razumov gave a perceptible start, yes, that's my origin. A simple provincial family, you are a marvel, Peter Ivanovich uttered in his, but it was to Razumov that she gave her death's head smile. Her tone was quite imperious. You must bring the wild young thing here. She is wanted. I reckon upon your success, mind. She is not a wild young thing, muttered Razumov in a surly voice. Well, then that's all the same. She may be one of these young conceited Democrats. Do you know what I think? I think she is very much like you in character. There is a smoldering fire of scorn in you. You are darkly self-sufficient, but I can see your very soul. Her shiny eyes had a dry, intense stare, which, missing Razumov, gave him an absurd notion that she was looking at something which was visible to her behind him. He cursed himself for an impressionable fool, and asked with forced calmness, "What is it you see? Anything resembling me?" She moved her rigidly set face from left to right, negatively. "Some sort of phantom in my image?" pursued Razumov slowly. "Or, I suppose, a soul when it is seen as just that. A vain thing. There are phantoms of the living as well as of the dead." The tenseness of Madame de S.'s stare had relaxed, and now she looked at Razumov in a silence that became disconcerting. "I myself have had an experience," he stammered out, as if compelled. "I've seen a phantom once." The unnaturally red lips moved to frame a question harshly. "Of a dead person?" "No." "Living?" "A friend?" "No." "An enemy?" "I hated him." "Ah. It was not a woman, then?" "A woman," repeated Razumov, his eyes looking straight into the eyes of Madame de S. "Why should it have been a woman? And why this conclusion? Why should I not have been able to?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.